It's time to pass the popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Alan Adams from The Main Edge in studio with us. Busy guy. Second weekend of shows, Escanaba into Moonlight at Penobscot Theater Company. Going great by all accounts.
Yeah, no, we got week two in the books. My first two-show day in a while was on Saturday. I'm considerably older and heavier than I was the last time I tried to pull something like that. So it's been good. Like, it's been a really fun experience. Like, the cast is great. We're really hitting our stride as far as it's one of those, you know, and you never really can put your finger on it, but we've reached that point where everything has sort of just officially gelled. Like, where everything is clicked in. Those sorts of little ups and downs that come through over the course of a show have largely sort of evaporated, and we've honed it into what it needs to be. And by all accounts, the audience response has been phenomenal. And I just hope that that more people come out and we finish it out strong.
Yeah, you start up again on Wednesday night?
Yep, Wednesday night. Wednesday through Sunday, our Sunday matinee on the 18th. That's going to be our final show. And then I will be bidding farewell to the Upper Peninsula.
You did get to see a couple of movies, though. And, well, where do we start with Heroes on a Train or Rabbits?
It's funny. I let's start with Peter Rabbit, because that movie was actually a good deal better than I thought it was going to
be. Wow. I'm shocked just from the trailers.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm someone, I have a very deep-seated love of Beatrix Potter and the work that she did, the characters that she created, and all that. So I wasn't necessarily looking for an edgy 21st century update of Peter Rabbit. But I get it. Like, I get it. The reality is there's a very quiet simplicity to the stories of Beatrix Potter that, you know, isn't necessarily all that cinematic, if we're going to be honest right. about it. And so to sort of bring forth that movie, bring that story onto the big screen in a way that's going to be engaging while still staying relatively true to the character was always going to be tough. It's got spirit, but it doesn't necessarily have as much of the soul of the original as maybe you'd want. But that being said, it's still a relatively entertaining movie. It's Peter Rabbit, voiced by James Corden, he just wants to get into old Mr. McGregor's vegetable garden. That's what he wants. And his partners in crime are his slow-witted cousin Benjamin Bunny, and his sisters Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail, two of whom are voiced by some of the most famous actresses on the planet right now. Flopsy is Margot Robbie, who also narrates the movie, and Cottontail's Daisy Ridley,
wow.
Who was in a little movie you might remember called The Last Jedi. Very recently. So he's trying to get into old Mr. McGregor's vegetable garden, and then through circumstances that I'm not going to go into details, it turns out that we discover that old Mr. McGregor, there's a young Mr. McGregor, a long-lost great-nephew named Thomas, played by Domhnall Gleeson, who's a manager of a toy store in London, and he comes out to McGregor's estate to get things cleaned up and prepare for a possible sale. Meanwhile, McGregor's neighbor, a woman named B, Beatrix, get it, who has a very loving and tender relationship, affectionate relationship with the forest creatures, played by Rose Byrne. And basically what we get are some pretty supercharged rabbit on human hijinks. Peter and his cohort basically are trying to get rid of Thomas, while Thomas is trying to get rid of them, while still trying to woo B, and unable to overtly get rid of the rabbits and such, because B is friends with the rabbits, and, you know, you see how these sorts of complicated relationship dynamics play out. And then, you know, there's a lot of ridiculous slapstick stuff, and, you know, the animation's great, bunnies in waistcoats, there's nothing wrong with that. there is, there's been a little bit of controversy surrounding the movie regarding the weaponization of food allergies at one point.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is, it's one of those things where, I mean, I guess I understand. Like, I watched the movie and it was like, and it didn't even occur to me that it would be a thing. But again, I don't have to hide from peanut butter when I go to school. So maybe it's different for a kid like that. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, it's silly. Like, it's not a particularly sophisticated movie. There's some pretty good slapstick gags, some sort of self-aware moments that are kind of fun, some winks and nods to the grown-ups in the audience. Again, it's not Beatrix Potter, really. Like, it's a rabbit wearing a coat and his name is Peter. But after you get beyond that, there's not a ton of resemblance. But it's still kind of fun. Like, I mean, it's not a great movie. It's not going to take its place among the classics of kiddie cinema. But, you know, there are certainly far worse ways to spend a couple of hours with your family.
All right. The other one you saw, the new Clint Eastwood film, The 1517 to Paris, a true story and at least an interesting hook in that the guys who were the heroes play themselves in the movie, even though they have no acting experience.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting experiment. One could argue that it is a noble experiment. What it is not is a successful experiment. It breaks my heart to say it because I think it's an incredibly compelling story. I think these guys are legitimate heroes in the capital H sense of that word. They are not actors. And it shows, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, I wanted to like this movie because, again, like the story, for those who are unfamiliar, these three Americans were on a train from Amsterdam to Paris. A gunman attempted to open fire in the passenger cars on that trip, and they basically stopped him before he was able to kill anyone. You know, and we're talking about multiple guns, hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Like, they averted what could have been an incredible tragedy. And it was an incredibly brave thing that they did. Bravery does not equal screen presence. And the thing about it, too, was Eastwood went out of his way. He told them specifically not to get any sort of training or anything like that. And I guess I understand that desire to find some sort of authenticity in it, but it just doesn't work. Their names, there's Spencer Stone, Alex Scarlatos, and Anthony Sadler. Those are the gentlemen. Their childhood friends grew up together. Their paths sort of diverge a little bit as they grow up. Stone winds up going into the Air Force. Scarlatos joins the Army National Guard. And Sadler goes to college, studies kinesiology. But they decide that, they're going to go out for some sort of one last hurrah and backpack through Europe. So they go to Italy, they go to Germany, they go to Amsterdam, and then they decide they're going to go to Paris. And that's when they wind up on this train. Where they're in the right place at the right time to prevent this incredible tragedy. They're not done any favors by either Eastwood's direction, because, you know, if there's one thing Clint Eastwood loves is those long, lingering sort of close-up shots that rely almost exclusively on actor reaction for their impact. Like, this is... It's absolutely the wrong group of people to try to... The marriage of idea and style is so incongruous, and it just doesn't work. And the screenplay, it's by a first-time screenwriter. I'm trying to remember her name. Dorothy Bliskell is her name. It's based on the book that Stone, Scarlatos, and Sadler wrote about the event. But it's just... It's filled with very flat, very generic dialogue, and that's not helped by, you know, when it's being delivered by guys who just don't have any experience. Like, you know, they're not uncharismatic by any stretch, you know, and you could see that specifically when we actually reach the incident. Like, the last quarter of the film is actually pretty compelling to watch because we're not relying on them saying, basically saying a screenwriter's interpretation of words they remembered saying when they talked to the guy who wrote the book. Right. You know, it's like you're three or four steps removed at that point. And so the personal connection is long gone. But when it's the event itself, like, you actually can kind of see, and there's that sort of the heart racing kind of feel to it. So that bit's actually pretty engaging. But the hour plus it takes you to get there, it's like the world's most highly budgeted student film. Like, that's what it reads like. It's like, it just, you know, exotic locales and whatnot aren't going to save you. And again, like, and you know, these guys, you know, it's not all non-actors. There are some familiar faces in this movie. Judy Greer and Jenna Fischer play Stones and Scarlatos's mothers, respectively. Thomas Lennon is in it. Tony Hale, friend of downtown, PJ Byrne.
Oh yeah,
is in it. Yeah, but it's one of those things where, again, like, they're all sort of hamstrung by a script that's just not very good, and you almost wonder what could have. It's the sort of movie that makes you wonder what could have been, because, again, I think it's a really interesting idea that Eastwood had, and for a guy his age, he's what, 88, something like that.
I was just looking that up. He's gonna be 88 in a couple of months.
You know, and so for a guy who's been doing it for this long and to have this sort of, you know, with this sort of lengthy career, for him to sort of take such an outside the box swing, it's admirable. It really is. But God knows he's as good as they come as far as, you know, sort of rendering the stories of ordinary men doing extraordinary things. Like, that's kind of his wheelhouse, but it just doesn't work. And again, it really pains me to say that, because I think it really is an incredibly engaging and compelling and powerful story. And these men are really worthy of being lauded and celebrated in this way. I just wish the movie was better. I guess that's what I keep coming back to. It's I want it to be good, and it's simply not.
Now, I was trying to think, is this his first film since American Sniper?
He did Sully.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, it's, you know, it would be the equivalent of casting Sully Sullenberger instead of Tom Hanks. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's an interesting idea on paper. It's like, oh, wow, that's really cool. And then in practice, it's like, oh yeah, no, this is why actors are paid and are trained for years and years to do what they do, because you can't just roll in off the street and do it.
Alan Adams sharing his thoughts on a couple of movies this week on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
We'll see you again on Wednesday.
I hope so.
You never know. It'll be sad if we don't.
It's been a while. It's been a while since I was able to be here on a Wednesday.
Well, you're out trotting the boards.
You know, and it's tough, and I miss you guys, but, you know, the stage waits for no man.
Well, and you've got just a very short break after this one, and you start on another one. You're doing the next Penobscot Theater production, right?
I am. Ugly Lies the Bone. Yeah, we were, because Brad LaBrie, who's in Escanaba and is also in Ugly Lies the Bone, we were talking about this the other day. We closed this show on Sunday. We're off on Monday. First read through for Ugly Lies the Bone is on Tuesday.
It's tough being in demand.
You can tell me about it. You know all about it, Rich Kimball.
Yeah, I'm all over that. Yeah, thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, movie reviews every Monday. You're on Pass the Popcorn on downtown.